What is creativity? How does it operate? What are its parameters? What does it mean to be creative? In this series, WROELP explores the creative processes of people in different realms of life to see for ourselves.
Hi, this is Heather Rose with WROELP, Radio Free Roanoke. Continuing our series on the creative process, joining us today is Joe Boucher, currently Director of Student Activities at Colquitt Center at Roanoke College, as well as former producer and production manager of King of the Hill and The Simpsons. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how you doing, Heather?
Great. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Can you give a little background about yourself?
Well, I'm originally from New York, and I came to Roanoke College. I was a student at Roanoke College in the late 80s, long time ago. And after I left Roanoke College, I moved to Los Angeles because I wanted to get into the entertainment industry. I had a business background from Roanoke, and I did some odd jobs in Los Angeles, but I snuck on to the 20th Century Fox lot one day, and I talked myself into a job in the Fox mailroom and started delivering Rupert Murdoch his mail every morning.
Oh, my.
Who had just bought the studio.
What's he like?
I mean, the way that I knew him, he was like a little professor. He was very nice in the mornings, and he held the door open for me, and I brought him his, stack of morning papers from around the world. And, it was just kind of an office environment when he was there. And
right. Courteous.
Wasn't working out of New York or London. But mm-hmm. That was it was a great place to start, to kind of get my foot in the door and get to know the entertainment industry. When the writer's strike was over, a bunch of shows went back into production. So I had a number of different jobs I could have taken. But I took a job on the Tracy Ullman show as the set production assistant, which was another great show to kind of get the experience of how a television show runs. And at the time, The Simpsons was just 1 minute shorts on the Tracy Ullman show. Mm-hmm. And we were going to expand The Simpsons into a half hour television series. So they kept me on that summer. And we started work on production of The Simpsons, 13 episodes as a series. So I was one of, seven or eight of the original employees with Matt Groening and Sam Simon. And it was a great opportunity because no one had done a animated television show probably since the Flintstones. I think there was one other show called Wait Till Your Father Gets Home, but the production model for how we would do that animated show was unlike any kind of shows in history because of the way that the television writers had a lot of control over the animation. As opposed to Saturday morning cartoons where the directors have a lot more control. So it was a unique opportunity to kind of make up the primetime animation pipeline. And, I was young and eager and ambitious, and it was a great opportunity. And I did a lot of jobs between production assistant and producer, but basically, by the third season, I was a producer on the show and ended up staying for the first seven seasons. And then at some point I had left the show to work on an independent film, but the opportunity to produce King of the Hill and kind of do what I did for The Simpsons came along to work with Mike Judge and Greg Daniels on King of the Hill. So after I read the script for the pilot for King of the Hill, I jumped at the opportunity. I was a big fan of Beavis and Butthead too. So I kind of jumped at the opportunity to get back onto a television show, and that was great. It led to a 13-year run that was just a show that I really loved, and we had a great staff and great writers and cast, and So yeah, and then after King of the Hill went down, I had started to write and create my own shows. But I had also started to transition to, I was starting to do a lot more coaching because my kids were young. I coached youth lacrosse in Los Angeles, and in West LA, the sport was really growing fast. And I had also taught some after school programs. I worked with an after school program in Los Angeles for at-risk middle school kids. And I really enjoyed coaching and teaching. And I think a lot of my energy had kind of shifted to education. I mean, I guess you could say it kind of became more of a calling after, you know, 25 years in the Hollywood trenches. And the opportunity came along to return to my alma mater and run Student Life and start the media arts program here. And I've also been able to help with the lacrosse team, coach the lacrosse team as well. So in 2015, I came back and took the job kind of directing Student Life. And I've been here ever since. So it's, I think, my sixth or seventh year. Yeah. On cool. campus. So
do you like it?
Yeah, I mean, it was always kind of made a really big impression on me as a young person. I had a lot of mentors here, including, you know, President Maxey, who was, you know, my fraternity advisor, and Coach Allison was my lacrosse coach. He's the athletic director here now. And Brenda Pogendorf was my supervisor in admissions because I gave tours when I was a student. So when I came back, you know, all those people who were important to me and kind of mentors to me were still here. So it was almost like coming home. Mm. You know, my family had left New York, so this was the closest thing to returning home. And it's been great. I mean, I love working with students and young people, and kind of as they're coming into their own and trying to find what their passion is in the world. And especially working with we get a lot of creative students. And if we can create programming with their talents, that's something that, you know, I think in Student Life in the last couple of years, Roanoke, we've done really well. Is I didn't necessarily have a big background in education, but because of my background as a producer, you know, the idea of like finding students and finding what they're talented in and finding a way to turn those into programming that we could use to entertain other students is probably something Roanoke does really well. Just kind of, you know, I think they brought me in to kind of think outside the box, and I think we've been able to do that in a number of different ways.
Nice. Can you tell us about some of the day-to-day duties and responsibilities of Director of Student Activities?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it feels a lot like, you know, my office in Los Angeles when I was producing. You know, it's a fun office. We get to produce a lot of different events and activities and concerts and dances and, you know, outdoor festivals. But it's a lot of working with students. I have 10 different student work groups on campus that work with me. And each of those groups have their own student supervisors and staff, whether it's event production like event staff or campus activities board or stage tech, which does sound and lights. You know, we have a media and marketing a group where we, you know, advertise and do social media for everything kind of going on in student life. We work closely with student government and the student orgs on campus. And we also oversee a lot of the media arts programs. We have a television studio and a recording studio, and WRKE is our campus radio station. And yeah, we get that. You get that in the Valley 100.3. So if anyone's interested, that's a
95.7 FM. You should don't broadcast.
We're not allowed to promote other stations on.
Well, you're allowed, but it's not promoted.
So and also oversee the Brackety Act, which is the school newspaper. You know, we have a lot of programs, you know, things like homebrews or Friday on the Quads or fall concert. Any kind of things that we can do to engage the students outside of the classroom. You know, I was a pretty involved student, so my experience outside the classroom was probably as important as what went on inside the classroom. So I think, you know, that's been a good job to me. It's a great education at Roanoke College. And
yeah, it is.
We also want the students to have, you know, have a great fun time outside the classroom. And if they can, you know, find their passions, I mean, a lot of the things that they do in student life has led to, you know, jobs. I mean, mm-hmm. I know my first year here, we also do the Basically Tarantino Film Festival every year on campus and with the Grandin Theater. And, you know, two of my original filmmakers, one's in Los Angeles writing now, and the other one just graduated from NYU's Tisch School of the Arts, and he just starred in a film, had a supporting role with Russell Crowe and Zac Efron in The Greatest Beer Run Ever. So, you know, The Greatest Beer Run Ever. Yes.
Interesting.
It's a New York Times bestseller, and they just made a film out of it.
Ah.
So I think it's about a soldier who, you know, goes to find his some of his fellow soldiers at different parts of the country that they're fighting a war in. And
so it's not really about beer.
Well, the idea is to just go to those places and have a beer with them before he goes. You know, really just visiting his friends. I'm not overly familiar with the book, but Omari Chancellor, that he was a student, and, you know, he really found that's, you know, when he was making films here at college, that's something he wanted to do, you know, as a career. And so if we can, you know, help point those students in the right direction and you know, help them discover their passion, then that's a win for
everybody.
Yeah, for everybody.
Cool. Well, you kind of answered it, but how did you get from Hollywood to Roanoke, Virginia?
Yeah, well, you know, I was saying, I you know, after 25 years in Hollywood, I think some of my attention had, I don't know, I mean, it started to focus more on coaching and teaching. I think my kids were young at the time, and I started coaching lacrosse with them. And I just loved, you know, there was something about working with young kids where they're at such a, you know, impressionable age. It's a lot of fun just to watch them, you know, discover their abilities and things that they're interested in. And there was another program called Team Primetime, which did athletic programming for at-risk middle school kids that I had always worked with as well. And it was, you know, I think it was the combination of those two things that really, I mean, I probably was a bit burned out on entertainment. I mean, I had, since the age of probably 26 or 27 when I started producing The Simpsons, I mean, it was a lot of pressure to deliver shows on time and on budget with a lot of different cooks on those shows. And obviously, you know, it's hard to create a hit television show. Those are two of the longest, you know, running shows in television history. And, you know, it's hard to create stuff that works, but also when shows are successful, it creates its own challenges to kind of, you know, keep them going. And I like to think, you know, what we did on The Simpsons early or whatever we set up was a pretty good business model. I mean, most of the animated shows, whether it's American Dad or Bob's Burger or Family Guy, or, all those shows are kind of based off that original primetime animation pipeline that we set up that could be efficient at times and probably had some inefficiencies in it. But ultimately, it gave the writing staffs the creative freedom to make a lot of revisions on the shows. And I mean, I think overall that whole process was pretty stressful to do at a high level for a long time. And, you know, I think education, you know, was something that was attractive and fulfilling in a different kind of way. you know, maybe being more in service to people than always constantly trying to figure out how you were going to make hit television shows. And, you know, LA is an interesting town, you know, it kind of has, it doesn't matter what you achieve. It's never enough.
Yeah.
You know, it's like all Johnny Depp wants to really do is be in a rock band, you know, and all, you know, you know, famous rock stars want to do is act and be in movies. You know, you always want more.
Yeah.
You're never quite satisfied. It kind of creates that environment that, it's kind of never enough, you know, and it gets old.
And tiring.
Yeah. So, there's a lot of great things about it. I mean, when I was young and it was a great adventure, and I love the creative process, and I, you know, still write, and I still, you know, am able to work on little projects here and there, you know, but a lot of times it's with my students now who are either making films or writing. I also teach screenwriting and film at the college as well. So that process is very familiar from, you know, my times as a producer, you know, overseeing those shows. So it wasn't as difficult a transition as you would have imagined, because I think a lot of it is just working with young people. Hollywood is a very young town, and you know, the idea of working with a lot of musicians and writers and actors and artists to create something is a lot of fun. And you know, but I do a lot of that here at the college as well. And, you know, both jobs involve a bit of, you know, being a liaison between, you know, more of a business structure and, you know, kind of being on the front lines with students, you know, kind of day to day, trying to help them kind of, you know, find their passion and, you know, create programming. And so I think there was a lot of similarities that, you know, help make the transition kind of smoother and make the day-to-day job just interesting. I mean, every day is kind of different, but I think, you know, the working with students and seeing them go from, you know, freshman to sophomore and junior and senior and then helping them try and get jobs and create opportunities for themselves and, you know, that constant energy of working with young people is a lot of fun. And it's kind of like you kind of thrive off that energy as well. I mean, I think in Hollywood, you thrived off the adrenaline, you know, which I don't know was always
sustainable
or healthy.
Yeah, both.
It seems like at college, there's a lot more thriving off of, you know, kind of the energy of young people and their kind of, it's an interesting time. I mean, it was a great time for me to kind of come here and kind of grow up and be exposed to a lot of different types of people. And, you know, I had never really been outside of New York before. So, you know, coming to the South was fascinating and kind of a different experience for me. And so it's exciting to, you know, see young people in that stage of their lives, too, and see how you can help, you know, kind of them find their passion and make their dreams come true. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I had a question on your class on screenwriting or script writing. Screenwriting. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us if there's an art to that or if it is just formulaic?
Well, there's absolutely an art to it, but there's also, you know, it's also a craft. And, you know, there is you know, you have to learn that craft like any other craft. I mean, there is formulaic. I mean, there's a lot of models within screenwriting and films. A lot of times people will see films and they go, I know how this is going to, you know, I know how this movie's going to go. And some of that is because most films, and not all films, but most films follow a three-act, you know, narrative structure. They follow the hero's journey. That became really popular after, you know, George Lucas did Star Wars, and they discovered that so many films have a similar structure. But you know, and I tell this to my students, and I don't, you know, sometimes it's not great to tell it to them right away, that, you know, learn the rules of screenwriting and then try and break them. I mean, it's always the most interesting films you see, like a Christopher Nolan film, like with Momentum or something, where, you know, he tells the story in reverse because the character has a, you know, short-term memory issues or something. You know, he kind of reinvented a way to tell the film, you know, or to take, you know, to take the characters into a new world, like he did in Interstellar, where, you know, they go to that, you know, three-dimensional world of all the moments in someone's life happening at the same time. You know, you have to find, as a writer, you have to find ways to make something kind of compelling out of something that could very easily be formulaic. So, and that is absolutely an art. You know, the creativity involved in learning to write, you know, dialogue with subtext and create new worlds and, you know, create characters that are very believable. All that is, there's certainly an art to it, the way there is to any type of writing. But it's true that you know, films and television shows do follow a lot of the same conventions. It's just, you know, the writer's job to disguise those formulas and conventions to make it interesting. Because when it's done right, it's always exciting, and, you know, I think it's one of the most powerful ways to actually influence people's thought when they can really engage and invest in a character and that character's story. Because films are so escapist, and you just get invested and you buy into that journey. And if it's done well, it's very powerful in the effect that it can have on people. And
yeah, I agree. Maybe change hearts and minds. There's that possibility. Are you currently working on anything new?
Do you mean at the college or other projects?
Creatively.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have as much time because it's such a big job for the college, and I wear a lot of different hats here, which is a lot of fun. I don't have as much time, but I do have some projects with, you know, if some of my students are out working now and I can help lend my name to their projects or help them kind of develop new things, I have some of those projects. I mean, I have plenty of, you know, screenplays and ideas for films and television shows that, you know, I kind of developed over my, you know, almost 30 years in Hollywood. So I think, you know, I don't have that much time into, you know, trying to figure out, you know, how to make them happen the way that I used to, but it's still fun to keep a hand in that creative process. I mean, there's certainly still things that I'd like to do, but I've been pretty happy since moving back here, and, you know, the job's been fulfilling in so many ways. And you know, one of the things that you realize, like, and I realized this with coaching, was, you know, when my kids started playing lacrosse, and not only my kids, but other kids from the neighborhood, you know, I said, I'll never get the thrill from coaching that I got as a player. But then when you start to coach kids and you see them achieve that same kind of success, you're like, wow, that's pretty incredible that I could come away from a game feeling the same excitement and satisfaction that I did when I played as when I'm coaching. And I think it's the same, you know, some of that's the same way now too. It's it was great to have, you know, kind of successes and be a part of those shows. But I do get a lot of satisfaction when I see my my own kids who are very creative themselves, and my students, when I see them accomplishing some of the things that they wanted to do creatively, that can be just as rewarding for me personally. So that's been, you know, that's always fun because there's always new students coming to the college, and, you know, my own kids are working on their own projects. So there's always plenty to do. I'm never bored.
Awesome. How do you make the leap from an idea in your head to the art you produce?
You know, I mean, the ideas, I don't think they ever really stop because, you know, I mean, when I hear music that I love or I see a television show or I see a film, I mean, I think those things are just, or you read a good book, those things are just so inspiring in themselves, you know, whether there are certain aspects of those that remind you of stories that you wanted to tell. I mean, most of the time, I mean, I had become, before I left Los Angeles, a lot of it was creating new characters and television shows. Like we did a couple animated pilots for 20th Century Fox, you know, two specifically, one was called The Boozmans. The other was The Mudhogs. And, you know, those were like television ideas that we were able to kind of write and create a pilot, animated pilot for. You know, sometimes there are television shows that, you know, I have a creative partner in Los Angeles, you know, that we created animated shows together. A lot of the feature films that I would write are just things that I've done over the years, you know, either inspired by my own life or stories that I find interesting or ideas or people that you meet. I find that, you know, my mind never stops, you know, trying to think of interesting stories. But I think some of that, you know, in what I do at the college, you know, it kind of goes the same way for the programming too, is that, I mean, I try not to do the same thing every year because I like to make it kind of student-based because I never know if I have a student comes in and they're just really strong with technologically being able to figure out, you know, how to do great events, live streaming them throughout the pandemic, or then we'll, you know, we had to switch to kind of doing programming that was kind of interactive and virtual, like during the pandemic, and having a student who, you know, sometimes young people have better skills with adults than when it comes to technology. Mm-hmm. You know, they can figure out things pretty quickly and are less afraid to push all the buttons on a machine or mm-hmm. on a new program or something. So
you got that fluid intelligence.
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of times, you know, we'll base some of the programming that we do based on what the students want to do or what their skills are. And that's constantly changing as well. You know, I mean, if I have to tell the students how to have fun, then there's probably something wrong with the world. You know, I don't think students have any problem in figuring out like the things they want to do or the fun they want to have. And, you know, it's my job to kind of just help facilitate those programs, kind of similar to how it was, you know, helping to facilitate, you know, getting a television show on the air for most of my career.
That's an interesting parallel. Well, I wanted to ask the difference between producing a TV show and a full length feature film.
Well, there's some, I mean, I've never produced a full length feature film, but I did work for Gracie Films. James L. Brooks was not only a really successful television producer who did The Simpsons and Taxi and Mary Tyler Moore, but he also produced films like Broadcast News and Terms of Endearment. Also, Cameron Crowe was a director who started with us, and you know, he did Say Anything while he was there, and Jerry Maguire. I've been around that world for a long time. I mean, I think the biggest difference between film and television is, you know, film is for the most part, you know, more of a director's medium. I mean, you have to start with a great script from a writer, but when it comes down to the actual production of it, the director is really calls most of the shots in film. Mm-hmm. And in television, it's definitely the writers who call all the shots. The writers not only write the screenplays in television, but when they show up at the stage to, you know, direct the actors or look at run-throughs, you know, if they have notes or they have direction on the way the television episode should go, the director's kind of going to take direction from the writers. So that's the biggest difference, is film is more of a director's medium and television's more of a writer's medium. There's some other differences. I mean, film has more of a independent film. I mean, some of that's changing. I mean, for a long time it did. If you want to make a film and you have a good script and you have the means to raise funding, you can make a film outside of the system, and you know, hopefully it's good enough to sell. Either, you know, bring it to film festivals and where buyers are looking for new product, or sell it to a Netflix or HBO or something. I mean, for the most part, television doesn't have an independent part of the industry. It's all funded by the studios and networks. So it's a little bit more structured in a corporate sense, the television industry.
I can see that and see how that would be a little constraining. What environmental factors is demonstrated to be helpful or limiting to your creative process?
What environmental?
Yeah.
I think music has always been really important to me. I get inspired by music, and it can certainly help set the right mood for, usually if I'm writing a screenplay or something, part of my writing process will be to make a mixtape of what the soundtrack to the movie is. I mean, that's always kind of been important to me. I wouldn't say, you know, writing is something that I do full time. I know a lot of people say writers just need to write. You have to always be writing. And I've never really subscribed to that. I've always kind of felt like I don't really get writer's block because I don't, you know, I kind of tend to write in my head before I sit down to write on the page. And maybe it's just because I have, you know, some attention deficit issues of just sitting there and looking at a page. I don't really have the patience to not know what I'm going to do. So a lot of times when I'm at night, I'll think of things, or when I'm out walking or exercising or even sleeping sometimes, I tend to work out some of those things in my head that by the time I do sit down to actually, and it goes, you know, even if I'm writing a letter or an article or something, you know, it's kind of the same way. I usually kind of write most of it in my head before I sit down. And it's amazing that I can actually, you know, see paragraphs in my head weeks later. You know, I remember it, what I wrote.
That is amazing.
So, yeah, it probably always helped on like taking notes in school when you're taking notes on a test or something. And then you can get, when you're in the test, you can actually see your notes, you know. It made for being a good tester, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think if I had to felt like I was compelled, like I had to write every day, you know, and maybe, you know, it's not just about the writing, but I think creativity comes in a lot of different ways. I mean, what I tell my students now is, you know, I mean, when I was their age, I don't feel like I worried about the same amount of things in the world that that young people do today. You know, I mean, everyone will say, well, what about the Cold War and, you know, getting under your desk for bomb shelters and stuff? I mean, I never really felt like that just caused a ton of stress in my life. I mean, the idea of, you know, simultaneous nuclear annihilation, I don't know. It wasn't something I felt like I worried about on a day-to-day basis. And I feel like young people have so many things, you know, to worry about that I'm not sure I would want to be a young person today. But
I kind of like getting older too. I appreciate the art of aging.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully it brings with it wisdom.
Yeah. Well, for sure. I feel that, you know, it's hard to, sometimes it just feels like, am I just tired or it's not as important as it used to be to me?
The latter. What's a real life situation that inspired you?
What's a real life situation that inspired me?
Mm-hmm.
You mean in terms of like what I wanted to do with my life or like a creative idea?
A creative idea.
I mean, I think coaching, one of the pilots we did for Fox was called the Mud Hogs, and it was about a high school football coach from Arkansas who was about to lose his 200th straight football game. And I think for me, like coaching was a good inspiration for that, because coaches, you know, sometimes you have to talk so much as a coach that coaches come up with some really funny kind of idiosyncratic things to say.
Yeah.
Because they always have to be talking and teaching and just acting like they know all the answers. And I think I've had some really good coaches in my life, but I've also found that I've also gotten some good material from different coaches. My lacrosse coach in high school, I ended up, we have an awards banquet at the end of the year, and I had to give him the award, but they wanted each student to like say some words about their coach. And I think that was the first time I actually did a comedy bit where I kind of thought of all the funny things he said throughout the time, you know, he was coaching us. And I remember one time we were playing a team called the Brentwood Indians at the time. And when we got to the locker room that day, he had up signs for Remember the Alamo. And we were just like, I was like, Coach, I don't see the connection there. so just funny things. And so this coach, the coach from Arkansas, you know, it was, you know, his friends who he played football with ended up giving him a pity trophy, because they thought it was impressive that he lost 200 games in a row without getting fired. So it was the first, it was his only trophy that he had won. I think, you know, things like that are always creative. I mean, the first film that I ever wrote was based on a newspaper article that I read when I was still here at Roanoke College, about some of the best players in the world playing lacrosse, and how not only did they not, you know, tell their employers that they were playing lacrosse because they needed so much time off to play in club ball, and some of them were on the U.S. team, and they were getting ready to go to Australia to play in the World Games, and not only weren't they making millions of dollars like other athletes, but they couldn't even tell their employers that they played lacrosse because they needed time off, and they didn't want them to think that they were, focused on their job.
I was like, lacrosse players.
But meanwhile, they're like, how would that feel if you were the best athlete in the world at a certain sport and you couldn't get paid for it and you couldn't tell people?
You're struggling to get by.
I love that story because, you know, back then, playing that sport, there was so much about, you know, athletes who put so much time and energy to play in the sport just out of the love of the game. You know, what it did to their bodies or what sacrifices they made to play whenever they could. I mean, that's, you know, to me, that was a great story. So that, you know, found its way into the first film that I wrote.
Cool. Well, does your work challenge any assumptions or conventions?
Does my work challenge any assumptions or conventions? now, work, when you're talking about work, do you mean
creative?
I'm going to college or creatively.
Creatively.
Challenge any conventions. I have so many different projects. I don't know. I'm sure it does in some ways, but I would have to kind of go back and look at I kind of have to look at some of the projects, I guess.
Every artist likes to think that their work challenges assumptions or conventions.
I don't know that there's, you know, too many different ways to tell stories. There are very, very rarely different ideas that people haven't thought of before. It's all kind of how you execute the ideas, I think, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, even when we were doing The Simpsons, it wasn't, it was a family television show. It wasn't, there have been families before, but with the look of it and the fact that they were all these yellow characters, the fact that, you know, Springfield, could have been any town, any state, USA, it was a interesting new take on the family. And it's certainly after 34 or 35 years, it's been, it's still on the air. I mean, I know when I first read the script for King of the Hill, the first scene in the pilot, was Hank and the guys just standing around the engine, talking about the engine. And, you know, I think Dale says, you know, Fiat, what's Fiat stand for? And he was like, fix it again, Tony, or something. And I remember reading that going, there's nothing on television like this. You know, first of all, like, Hollywood doesn't tend to do what they would call the flyover states very well. You know, a lot of it is always centered on New York or Los Angeles. And, you know, I remember reading that thinking, this is so funny. You know, it could be, I mean, it's about these guys from Texas, but it could have been about these guys from Long Island, or it could have been about these guys from Ohio. You know, it's, you want it to feel different and you want it to feel fresh, but you also want it to be relatable, mm-hmm. you know? And I just think the idea of those, like, four guys standing around the engine, you know, the original idea for it came because Mike Judge, when he was living outside of Dallas, he was trying to build a fence in his backyard, and he had some neighbors who were kind of just like watching him, like drinking beers and watching him build the fence and kind of snickering, or, you know, and at a certain point, the neighbors came over and asked him if he needed help, you know, building the fence. And he said, you know, sure. And they started helping him, and they kind of like took over to the point where he felt like he was in the way. And he just kind of like went over to his, you know, back porch and, you know, watched them drink beers and build his fence. And I think that was, you know, where he got the idea for Hank and the guys. So, yeah, I mean, just I always think it's exciting to work on or even watch things that feel fresh or like something you haven't seen before. It's not, doesn't happen that often, but it happens enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, how has your artistic expressions changed over time?
I don't know that it really has. I mean, you know, I think for me as a creative person, I mean, I've had some success, but I feel like I've had more success in helping facilitate other people's success and their creativity. I mean, that sounds like, that's kind of disappointing that I maybe have all these ideas that are, you know, have been difficult to bring to fruition. I mean, I think when I was younger, it was kind of more important. You know, as I've gotten older, I think I've appreciate the fact that there's a real value in someone who's able to talk to business and corporate people and talk to artists and be that bridge between the two. Mm-hmm. And I think some of that is because I'm a creative person, but I'm also a business person. You know, it doesn't matter how many creative ideas I work on, you know, people still want me to oversee the budget and the financing, you know? and that's fine, because I mean, that's certainly something that I enjoy as well, you know, being a more business minded or pragmatic. And, you know, I think, I don't know. I mean, I think I've, over time, it's just been more accepting of, you know, what my role is. And I've always been, through sports, a team player. So a lot of that comes down to, you know, what does the team need me to do to be successful? And I think as an athlete, I was always that kind of a person. So I've translated that into, you know, the work that I do as well. And, you know, I don't feel like, whether it was Hollywood or whether it was Roanoke, I don't feel like I've ever really had like a job. Because I think of a job as something you don't get excited about doing every day. And I think, I feel like I've always just felt like I was doing what I wanted to do. I have more hard time figuring out what I want to do outside of work than what I want to do at work.
That's what Emily said.
Well, usually it's like I want to spend time with her outside of work. That I'm very clear about, but I just love what I do. And the other things that I think about, like, you know, whether it's things that my students or my own kids are doing, I always find a way to, you know, try and contribute to those situations as well.
That can be very rewarding. I used to work with kids and at-risk kids. It's stressful, but it's rewarding.
Yeah.
Well, who's your greatest influence?
Who's my greatest influence? You know, I would say probably my mom and my kids.
How many kids do you have?
I have two kids. My son Griffin is a musician, and my daughter Poetry is a writer and a filmmaker. My mom had a very kind of creative side and a business side to her as well. And I think she really influenced me, whether it was like teaching me how to balance a checkbook or how to strip and paint a piece of furniture or paint watercolor or what music she liked. I mean, I think she was a big influence on, those parts of my personality. But also my kids, I mean, I think my kids got a lot of, have a lot of creativity, but they're so fearless in what they do. I don't think I have the same fearlessness that they did, as artists. And I think that's important, you know, to be able to be confident, you know,
yeah.
In Hollywood, I could never tell. For me in Hollywood as a creative person, I could never really tell if I had a fear of success or failure, because certainly I achieved some success at a young age and I was able to be around really successful creative people. And, you know, you kind of go, you kind of see the downside to that as well. But then there's also a fear of, of failure, of really putting yourself out there to be, you know, judged or having to get feedback that you either don't agree with or you don't like. I mean, I think that's always, I don't know. I think, you know, I don't see my kids. My kids will put themselves out there, you know, and I don't feel like I necessarily put myself out there when I was young or I don't know if I do now. And that's something to influence you, you know. And my mom, you know, she was just, she was a housemaker, you know, she was a homemaker. And I think she had a lot of, until the kids were old enough to get out of the house. I mean, you know, then we realized she probably should have been running companies, you know, but it was just the time, it was just the time. That's what you did. You know,
yeah.
You had a couple kids and you stayed home. But then when we saw what she was able to do in the business world and how smart and how outspoken and just fearless she was, that was pretty cool to watch and, you know, to kind of see her grow in a different way. When I finally forced her to get a job, when she said, she remembered the time when she went back to work because I was home from lacrosse practice and she was just kind of standing there at the sink, you know, smoking a cigarette. And I looked over and I was like, "Ma, why don't you get a job?" And she was like, "Wow, I've been so miserable. That's exactly what I'm going to do." And
what does she do?
Well, she's taught herself to type and she went back to training school and she ended up, you know, working for an aviation company.
Nice.
As their contracts administrator. And she loved it, you know, and, you know, she was probably a bit too outspoken in that corporate environment to really succeed. But she was just always a very outspoken person. So
cool. Very admirable for a woman.
Yeah. She's a great role model. You know, yeah. I had a lot of positive female influences in my life.
What are you most proud of?
Probably being a good father. Yeah, I would say, you know, I think also around the time I left Los Angeles, you know, I went through a divorce and ended up, a single dad as well. And being able to kind of be there for my kids and, you know, getting into education and finding a schedule that kind of matched their schedule so I could be there for them. They were going to school and I was working at a school and those schedules tend to line up pretty well. And I think that was important to me. And, you know, even just maybe getting them out of Los Angeles to come to a kind of a simpler place where we could kind of, you know, enjoy nature, enjoy kind of small town living, enjoy the community
that's that good. Yeah.
Valley has to offer. That was, I think it was a great, a great move. So yeah, I mean, I feel like I've done really cool things with my, with some of my work, but I think being a good dad was definitely probably the most important thing.
Absolutely. What is the best piece of advice you've been given?
Oh my goodness. Wow. I have books of, I always tend to write down, good advice and good sayings and good things that people say. This might be one of those situations where I have so many of them, I'm not going to be able to think of just one.
What's one you live by?
Let me think. Here's one. Let's see. The key to happiness is good health and a bad memory.
And a bad memory?
Yeah.
Agreed. A sound. Well, what is the role of an artist in society?
I mean, I think it's invaluable. I think it's the most important role. Because they're the, you know, they're the storytellers. They're the dreamers. They're the, you know, they're kind of the prophets of the future. I think it's such a, I think storytelling is so powerful, a way to express yourself. I think, you know, that I think that that creative force is, you know, there's almost like a higher power energy to the creative life force. And I don't know, that's a tricky one. I wouldn't want to get too spiritual, but I'm a big, you know, one of the things I think I was going to say this before that I always tell my students is, and I think that's where we were getting to the problems in the world. And I always tell them, you know, there's a lot of things in the world right now that need solving and need fixing. And I think the biggest role of the young generation is that you guys are going to need to be creative problem solvers. And I just think, you know, being able to not only be a problem solver, but be creative and think outside the box and, you know, look at the world in a different way. You know, I think humans tend to be a little like slow to change and, you know, they like things to be neat in categories and, you know, but I think there's a lot of things going on in the world that we're going to need young people to come up with new ways of kind of thinking and living and new ways of doing things. If we're going to keep, you know,
surviving
as a species. Yes. Yeah. I'm always interested when people go, we're destroying the earth. No, we're not destroying the earth. The earth is going to, you know, the earth shrugs and, you know, we notice it. The earth is going to be fine. The only thing we're destroying is our ability to actually live on the earth.
Right.
Yeah, it'll be here when we're gone.
Mm-hmm. On that bright note, you have been listening to Joe Boucher, Director of Student Activities at Rona College, as well as former producer and production manager of King of the Hill and The Simpsons. And I'm Heather Rose of Radio Free Roanoke, 95.7 FM.
This is Joe Boucher, and you're listening to WROELP Roanoke.